Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Houston Bigfoot Podcast. This is Dr. John Stamey coming to you live from the sun and fun capital of the world, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, where it's been cool today, but normally it's been hot. We've had a hot summer so far, and we're getting ready to barrel into the 4th of July, so it's going to be wild and crazy. We've got our co-host, Kyler Smith, from down there in Houston as well. How are you doing, Kyler?
Doing good, John. I'm a little tired, to be honest, but I'm ready for tonight's show. It's going to be fun.
Well, I am too. Glad to have you here. And we've got a very interesting guest, one of our favorite guests on Houston Bigfoot, and that is none other than the Bigfoot researcher and explorer Matthew Delf from a little tiny town called Ewing, Virginia, which is in that lower southwestern part of Virginia. How are you doing tonight, Matt?
Oh, I'm doing excellent. Doing great.
Well, good. We are glad to have you here. We've got I'd like to start out where our topic tonight is UFOs and Bigfoot. It's going to be an interesting topic. And I'd like to share with you, my attorney, he watches out for UFO articles all the time. And he sent me one this morning, and I thought it would be very timely to speak about it as we get started on this UFO and Bigfoot podcast. It's an exclusive from the Daily Mail. I love the Daily Mail over there in the UK. It got a lot of interesting paranormal articles. And it says, exclusive, their presence alone is a serious national security issue. Dozens of sailors confirm their warships were swarmed by at least 100 otherworldly UFOs, as their accounts contradict Navy Chief's effort to dismiss these vessels as drones. Now, here's what happened. In 2019, filmmaker Jeremy Corbell tells us that U.S. warships were swarmed by at least 100 UFOs with inexplicable capabilities. It's amazing. Last year, he published videos from the warship incidents that really caught fire on social media, and I remember that. The videos were verified by the Pentagon and showed flashing objects hovering above U.S. Navy ships in the Pacific Ocean. In a historic hearing on UFOs last month, Navy chiefs tried to explain away the incident, saying they were reasonably confident the objects were drones. Now, why? They're reasonably confident. That phrase, Mr. Delf, means nothing, does it?
No, it don't.
They were reasonably confident. That's like saying, well, I guess they were drones. Kyler, you know, reasonably confident. What does that mean? Doesn't mean anything to you much, does it?
No, not even close. It's just another one of their excuses, as usual.
Now, you know, filmmaker Jeremy Corbell is now kind of hitting back at him, claiming he's got dozens of accounts from the crew, investigators, and brief officials to say that the UFOs were definitely UFOs and were otherworldly. The nature and origin of the craft are still unknown. And witnesses say they flew in ways that would put publicly known drone technology to shame. All right, now, so, but, you know, the Navy comes up, well, we're reasonably sure that they were drones. That says they're reasonably sure that we're going to eat supper tonight. It doesn't mean anything. So anyway, Matt, talk to us a little bit about our topic tonight, because, first of all, we've got UFOs coming out of the woodworks right now. I mean, my latest book, Look Up in the Sky, has got, I think, 10 UFO sightings. I mean, they're all over, between land between the lakes, between all over Texas, all over California, South Carolina being one of the hot spots of UFOs. Now, what's the connection between UFOs and Bigfoot? Fill us in, buddy.
All righty. Well, it's a sensitive topic, which I love to – the only way you get answers is you got to think outside the box. You'll have the MUFON, which is the Mutual UFO Network that took over after Project Blue Book ended. And, of course, you got the Bigfoot cryptid community, and they don't like to clash or mix, and which all it's doing is hurting themselves in the research. That's how you can usually tell if somebody's been out in the field doing a lot of research, because you're gonna experience things that's totally you know, just you can't explain. And so I started doing the whole cross-reference, met Angela Scheer, State Director of Tennessee for MUFON. She was Investigator of the Year 2019, and me and her started doing some research together, doing the cross-reference. And 20% of your UFO and Bigfoot sighting reports are in the same area. So you've got all these high strange areas. It could mean several things. The first case of actually documented report of the UFO and Bigfoot connection was in 1888. It had out in California, a bunch of ranchers had a lot of cattle mutilation, stuff going wrong with their cattle, you know, dying or and so forth. And so they had a meeting with a Native American tribe over there, and it was it starts with a P. I don't want to butcher the name, the Pitiwi, something like that tribe. Now, they claim that they seen a dancing sphere come out of the sky like a moon, come down to the ground, and release three crazy bears, three crazy upright walking bears is what they called them.
Sounds like Bigfoot to me, doesn't it?
Exactly. They're walking bipedal. They're covered in hair. I don't know why they call them dancing bears or crazy bears. I don't know how they were acting. But that was your first case documented of the connection in that area.
Now, again, Matt, what was the year of that? And in what general area of California was that?
I'm thinking it was Northern California. It was 1888, though. If you do a Google search on 1888 Bigfoot UFO, it should bring up some info on it. And
okay.
That was the very first documented case. And then as you go throughout, of course, you know, you've got several other cases. Like, look at Momo out there in Missouri. You know, you had, during that one period of time, you had all these UFO and Bigfoot monster type connections. And it goes to show you, a lot of people don't want to, you know, want to classify these things as being supernatural. To me, it's only supernatural if you don't understand science. It's so advanced that it's got to be magic, you know, but it's not. It's just more advanced than what we know of, and it can all be explained with science.
I believe as a scientist, as an NC State PhD scientist, I can tell you that a lot of these things are simply our lack of understanding. And to quote
exactly
Nikola Tesla, what looks like magic today in 100 years will be fairly well explained science. It just will be. And that's what we need to realize. Although, you know, I guess, and let me ask you this, because I'd like to clarify something. I like the phrase paranormal because it tends to lend itself to some type of science that we don't understand. I mean, I don't like the word superstition or these other words like that, but I think the word paranormal is a fairly decent word to kind of link science with something that we don't know. How do you feel about that?
I definitely. It's just, it's so high advanced that the people's perception, everybody's perception here, you've got different levels of perception. And a lot of people just don't want to, it's got to be magic. It's got to be magic if, you know, and take back, I don't know, say a couple hundred years from now, if we were to light up a flashlight and all these cavemen see it, they're going to think it's magic. So it's just the understanding. They don't have their conscious level and everything is not up to where it needs to be, and they're looking in the wrong places. They don't want to think outside the box. And if you start looking into different things, like, for example, everybody talking about portals. We did a study, and we're like, okay, so we got to break it down scientifically. Can portals be, are they real? Do they open? And a professor out of Iowa University, Angelia, had contacted him and told him what we were doing, and he told us that you got to have a zero magnetic field with the big burst of energy. And he said they open and close all the time. They just can't predict when it's going to happen because you got to have a zero magnetic field. And it's got to have such a high source of energy, for example, a solar flare. So, but they can predict, I found out. Have you ever heard of the polar cusp?
I've never heard that before. What is that?
Okay, it's in Antarctica. Certain time of day, I think it's around noon or something. I don't know which time zone it'd be in. But the magnetic field, the way the sun and everything, it opens up basically a portal. You got the energy from the sun, and these solar flares can go straight in, and it opens up. There's no magnetic field right there in that area. So that's where, of course, nobody's allowed to claim Antarctica, and they've had all these reports and stuff from up there. But it opens up. It's like a portal that opens up every day.
So they can, I'm guessing, so if we had scientists and people down there, like trying to predict where and when it's going to happen, I mean, would that be possible? I feel like there'd be more people down there looking at that specific spot.
They are, but they kept it so hush-hush. It's like, for example, up there, the scientists, they had some professors from Arizona University that had went up there, and supposedly they had seen, they said, the civilization underneath the ice that had these cryogenic pods, and these huge, giant aliens were in these cryogenic pods. They were still asleep. They had jumped in there super quick because their whole lab, whatever they was working on, they had different stuff. And this is where it gets really interesting, because they claim that it was, they had body parts, they were doing experiments on stuff, on humans and everything else. They had all these body parts, human bodies, but they jumped in those cryogenic pods because this freeze took over super fast, and they jumped in there, and they're still asleep, but they are scared to awaken them because they don't know what they'll do. Now, these professors out of Arizona, they got shut up. They said, nope, nobody was up there. They shut it all down. So it kind of makes you wonder, what's really going on up there. And one thing, What's kind of cool with this whole, anytime of these areas, like I'm working with a group right now, and most of them they're military, mostly people. If we see Bigfoot tracks or we see any type of track, we measure the radiation on it, because these areas that we're researching now, we got one really particular area that the magnetic field is screwed up there, and they have actual video evidence of two of our research team members disappearing into this cube-type portal. So in that area, we've had Bigfoot activity. You've had UFOs, orbs. So it's in these areas is where you're getting most of your activity. So
now, Matt, I've got a quick question for you. If they disappeared into this portal, have they come back?
Yes. Now, this is what the Army Ranger, whenever he stepped into one, he recognized his surroundings, and he stepped right back out. It had changed, so he stepped right back out. Had another team member that went, and he was gone for a while, and then he reappeared clear across on this other side of the meadow. He cannot remember anything, but he said whenever one incident, he was in there, and he said everything changed. We had foliage, everything on the ground. There was grass and stuff, in this field, and it was all smooth. And the stars disappeared, so it was like nothing but total darkness. And so in this area, and we have all kinds of. Anytime we have activity, for example, our last expedition, it wasn't in that area. It was in a different area, and we went and they had activity. They started having weird chatter stuff. The radiation spike had jumped tremendously. It went from like a 0.8 up to 3 point something in just a matter of instant. So that means the high energy is going to promote radiation, of course. So something was coming from there. And it was pretty wild because they lost their, we use radios and stuff, and they lost all radio communication. Everything started going haywire. And there's always a spike. Anytime there's activity, there's always a spike in radiation.
This would be an amazing place to go visit.
Oh, yeah. They keep that. That's the whole thing. Well, the one place that we went this last time, they were more open about it. But this other project that we're working on, they keep it hush-hush. We can't tell location. They've actually got the video in a research partner of mine, Trey Hudson. He works in intel with the government. And he's showed some, at a lot of these MUFON stuff, he'll show the video of them actually disappearing into this portal. And what's crazy is, like said in this, you know, we've had UFO sightings there, Bigfoot sightings. So all these areas that you're getting a lot of this activity, there's got to be some sort of a connection.
Well, there has to be. And especially for a person like me that doesn't know a whole lot about Bigfoot, I automatically just think, like, obviously, to me it makes sense that they would have a connection, because I don't know how the Bigfoot would stay hidden so easily without anybody else's or something else's help.
I had one report. It's kind of cool, which I have done it. I've been tracking it, and then all of a sudden the steps just disappear. Well, this one report, this one guy who had talked about that the strides were 6 foot apart in the middle of this field, and then the strides got 10 foot apart, and then they just quit in the middle of nowhere. So something spooked it probably, and it took off running, and then it just poof, it was gone. So something picked it up, did something.
Then it obviously
jumped
into a portal, is what
exactly.
I would say.
Exactly. Something has opened up, and it's got to have, like I said, a high energy area. And if you look at your these areas too, a lot of activity. They got a lot of quartz, and your earth, the material there is, you got different minerals and stuff, and it's like, they're conductors or whatever to help. That's why these areas are loaded with activity. Now, with the Bigfoot and the UFO, are they abducting them? Are they releasing them? Are they studying? Are they a different type of alien? You've got so many possibilities on that. And I don't think all these things covered in hair are what people consider Bigfoot. Just because they're covered in hair, everybody always wants classified as Bigfoot. You know, there's an alien race that's that's covered in hair. So, what are these people saying? Everybody always wants to throw it down there. Oh, it's Bigfoot. This can't be happening. Well, obviously, they haven't spent a whole lot of time out in the field, because you're going to come across stuff you cannot explain.
So when you said earlier that they're keeping it quiet, they're keeping it hush-hush, who's they that you're talking about? Are you talking about the government, or are you talking about MUFON?
Well, all of them, basically, because any type of information you have, you can't release. It's unless MUFON approves of it, their group. The group that I work with, we sign alpha datas, disclosure forms. We can be tried. It strictly says whatever state we're working in, we can be, if we give out information, then, we can actually be taken to court over it and prosecuted. So,
wow.
It's some pretty good work that I do, but they're sharing a lot more with it, these group members. Like our last expedition, the one I was talking about where the radiation spike went up, in my group, they kind of went live, and it was a different area that we were at. We even gave location of that one and, what we were doing, and let, just little live videos, updates for people to see, what kind of work that we do. and it's all linked. That's what people just don't get, you know. Anytime you got a lot of Bigfoot activity, then usually there's something else going on there too. Even the Indians, you know, there's usually these sites, these areas they have, it's usually some kind of quartz or, you know, something in that area that is also associated with it, you know. I mean, it's just people just don't want to put two and two together. Am I making any sense?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I don't know. To me, it sounds pretty common sense. But then again, I've also been a huge fan of the paranormal, you know, area. So maybe, you know, someone who's not just opposed to the whole thing, then I guess, yeah, that just either freaks them out or I don't know. I'm kind of curious about that.
And so, like, a lot of times, too, we'll have our we'll be having activity and our equipment will just completely power down. Batteries be full, be everything, and all of a sudden, it just, boom, it shuts straight down. It's crazy because you're sitting there, you know, all of a sudden people have been, have you heard the term being zapped by Bigfoot?
I've never heard that before.
Well, see, and that's why everybody's like, no, that's magic. It's not magic. It's science. You just got to look at it. Everything can be backed by science. Animals, certain animals can give off infrasound. A tiger does it. Elephant does it. Tiger does it and it freezes, you know, it paralyzes their prey. And it can also, they use it to communicate. And it can go through mountains, it, depending on the frequency level. That's how a lot of people, these Bigfoot, communicate. They can send these frequencies. But we've been out, and all of a sudden somebody will get sick. We'll have an activity, and all of a sudden somebody will get sick, physically get sick. And they will feel nauseous, headache. Sometimes they kind of black out a little bit. I've seen them drop to their knees. And it's, if you look up what happens, because the U.S. government uses it on crowd control at times, infrasound. If you get zapped with too much infrasound, it, all the same characteristics these people are experiencing is the same thing of being exposed to too much infrasound. But it's coming when we're having activity around where we're at or our camp.
So we're just designed to just handle that.
Exactly. I think it's a defense mechanism for them as well. I've heard of people, you know, just completely just blacking out. I mean, not remembering anything. Next thing you know, we're hiking along, and a lot of people, oh, it's probably a heat, you know. But sometimes it's, you know, could it be health-related? I'm sure, you know. But whenever it happens and it's cold and you're not overheated and you're having activity at that time, same symptoms of being hit with infrasound. So a lot of people don't want to know, oh, that's the woo is what they call it. No, it's science. You can go and look. These animals produce this stuff. You're just not aware of it because you've never looked at it.
You know, it's interesting, Matt, when you talk about woo, that is a term used by skeptics who don't know what they're doing. They do know skeptics in general, and I'll say this out to the world. They in general do no research. They in general just say what they want to say. And they use no logic in trying to prove anything, and that's why I'm on an all-out war with skeptics. I think they're bad for research. I mean, they just want to say, well, it just doesn't exist. It couldn't possibly be. It couldn't possibly exist. This is ridiculous. Well, you know, that's all right. Life and death happen, and they're pretty real too. But you know, they don't want to talk about that. So I mean, I just don't understand these people that, you know, they're just lazy. And they just want to say what they love. Skeptics love to hear themselves talk. Don't you think, Matt?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it's just not skeptics. I like the Bigfoot community. It's divided. You got one group that says it's flesh and blood. It can't be anything else, which I'm sure, okay, there's many different species, many different things out here. But we always classify everything as Bigfoot. If it's got hair on it's covered up, it's got to be a Bigfoot. So you have to break down, like I like to do. I always like to break down exactly what do you consider Bigfoot, you know? Is it the Patty, you know, from the Patterson Gimlin film? If that's what you consider Bigfoot, okay. Just because this thing's covering hair don't mean it's the same species or same animal or creature or human. Some of them are ancient humans that come through these things. And they don't want to accept in the Bigfoot world. They say Bigfoot can't do this. It can't do that. Well, to me, that tells me two things. They've not spent that much time out into the woods that they claim, because they're going to come across stuff that they cannot, you know, it's going to wrap around their mind like, you know, now wait a second, why did this just disappear? Why am I hearing this sound? It's right in front of me, but there's nothing there, you know? How come all of a sudden
it's there, all right, you just
exactly.
Can't see it.
And they like to, maybe these are the people that, you know, that are trying to help cover up the truth. And because I've seen several team members, because they said, oh, these guys are woos, they're hoaxers. They don't hoax anything. They've never hoaxed a thing the entire years that I've been researching with them. They're just stating what people don't like to hear. You know, they're just putting the facts. Hey, this is what we experienced. You take it how you want, but this is what we experienced. And they're labeled as a hoaxer. It's like, no, there's no hoaxing in it. And then, of course, you know, they're not intelligent enough to look outside the box. That's why they're stuck in the same old thinking, same old pattern, and they keep getting the same old results. Nothing.
I think a lot of times a lot of the Bigfoot community gets more excited about the conspiracy theory notion than they do about the research.
That's probably true.
Now,
a big part of that.
I mean, I think they just love to talk about conspiracies. They all just need to go back to the day of the Kennedy assassination, and they can talk about conspiracies all they want. But that's not what we're about here. We're about research, and we're about trying to find out what is going on. Unfortunately, this research is not funded by the National Science Foundation. They want to categorize the number of butterflies of a particular genus and species. They're not interested in this. They don't give money. And all of us, I mean, I don't know how your research is funded, Matt, but, you know, I have to pay for what I do. I have to pay to go to
exactly.
conferences. I have to pay to publish my own book. Hope that I can make ends meet and everything, and I hope people enjoy them. And so far they have. The research I've done has served me well, but, you know, I've been paying for it. Nobody else is going to be paying for it except me. So anyway, I just wanted to mention that as I contemplate, you know, what's going on. And so, and I'm glad you agree with, I mean, out of curiosity, can you tell us the research that you're doing? I mean, do you pay for your own gas to go where you're supposed to go?
I pay for everything.
Okay.
I mean, all my equipment, which I use some of, you know, my team members, they've got, a lot of them have excellent equipment, you know.
And who pays for that, Matt? Who
they
pays
do.
For their
they do. Exactly.
All right. Yeah. So, you know, we're in an age of self-funded research. If you're lucky, I mean, you know, I got lucky. I got flown out to Hollywood, and I was on Unexplained starring William Shatner. And I mean, they treated me like a king, and it cost them about $3,000 to fly me out, two nights at the hotel, meals and everything. But I mean, you know, that was one time out of all the other times that I have to spend my own money. I'm not trying to belabor the point. I'm just trying to let people know that by the way, nobody else pays for this subscription to Blog Talk Radio but me. You know, I mean, so that's the whole point, is we're doing largely unfunded research. And it's a little bit slow, but it's getting the job done as much as possible. Don't you agree?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I said, you know, we might get – somebody might ask me to speak at a conference or do something like that, and they may pay for my expenses on that. That's just a one-weekend thing. That's not the – that's not my entire body of research. Has been all self-funded, you know, the travel, everything. And, of course, everybody knows me. I travel about every weekend somewhere. And it's all self-funded. I mean, I work hard to make that money, but I'm putting it into the research, and we're getting great results. I mean, you know, some got better equipment than others, but and it's amazing this technology – now is helping us better understand, you know. It's like whenever they got the video of the portal, and they even did a reenactment last time I was at the location of it to just prove, you know, that it wasn't, they weren't stepping into something else when you see it in the video. But the, you know, they've got some high-tech equipment that they use, these guys. And, you know, I'm fortunate enough to be researching with him and get to experience it as well. I mean, my equipment alone, I've paid lost, gosh, I don't know how much money I've got wrapped up in stuff that I have. But the better equipment, it's going to cost you. It's going to cost you thousands of dollars. And the reason scientists aren't back because they don't want it exposed. They're not going to fund something that they're trying to keep hush-hush. The reason trying to keep it hush-hush is because they don't want to open Pandora's box. As soon as they open that box, then they're going to go, well, what is it? You know, it's going to expose all kinds of crazy stuff. So,
well,
and,
Matt, I'll say this. I'm going to jump in. Being a former research scientist at a university, and I got to entertain the former head of grants of the National Science Foundation. And all she cares about is collecting data in streams and rivers. That's all they care about. You know, I'll never forget, we were having cocktail hour. And a friend of mine who's a world-renowned professor, who's a wonderful researcher, who is busy keeping track of water levels in major rivers in South Carolina, which I think that's an admirable and important thing to do. Because nobody's really paying for that research, and I think it's important that it get done. And so she said, well, that's what I do. And the former head of grants of National Science Foundation, she said, no, I asked what your research hypotheses were. And my friend looked at her and said, I monitor water levels in lakes and rivers throughout South Carolina for the good of the community. And that idiot lady, now she's an idiot, I'm not going to mention her name, and she says, well, what are your research hypotheses? Like, it's like she wasn't even listening. She didn't care. And you know what, Matt, I bet you're aware of this. I think lake, stream, and river levels in South Carolina over a period of 30 years are very important because we're subjected to hurricanes, tornadoes, and everything else. And we better monitor that stuff. And I think that's a grand thing to do, don't you? Monitor that.
Yeah,
and know what we're doing in the National Science Foundation. Former head of grants for National Science Foundation acted like she didn't care. And that's the typical National Science Foundation approach. I've submitted grants, and they were just completely turned down. They were good grants. But they didn't care. All they care about is categorizing butterflies, some such nonsense that really doesn't do us a lot of good. They don't even worry about monitoring water level, which can be critical when you have houses along the coast, you know. And anyway, it's interesting. It's fun watching everything transpire. And we're out here. We're on the forefront of science. I'll share with you a project that I'm working on right now, and people can laugh at it, but they better not laugh too hard. Because there are certain areas in the country which are prone to paranormal experiences. You're aware of that, right, Matt?
Yep.
That's right. And one, I can tell you, is Rabun County, Georgia. where we hold the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. And I think you're aware that there's a lot out there between Wool Woman Road and all kinds of stuff right around that little Rabun County. And BFRO's got like 12 or 14 sightings in their database just from that one little area. And what I'm doing is I'm putting together a series of books. It's not as if I don't have other things to do, like make a living, but I'm putting together a series of books that talks about these things so that if somebody is a researcher and doesn't know an area, but they want to go look at it, they can get my book for 10 bucks, and they can have some education about really what's there, and then I can jumpstart somebody's research program 2 years maybe if I put these books together. And I think that's an okay contribution from me, don't you, Matt?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, if somebody's jumping into this field and they don't know where to begin, you know, how else are they going to find out?
They can get the field guide to Bigfoot research that I wrote and published. They can get my little field guide books about Rabun County and various other places. You know, I'm putting one together about Myrtle Beach. Did you know that? Because we're the hot spot of UFO activity in South Carolina. I didn't know if you probably knew that. But, yeah, we're the hot spot of UFO activity. So I'm going to have a map of Myrtle Beach with little X's and little numbers so that people can know where they were. And if someone's interested in it, they can go around and look. And I think that's an okay – that's something that I can do as an individual. You know, I mean, I don't have a team of researchers, but I think it's something I can do to help the whole research effort. And wherever you go to do your stuff, it would have been nice if you had had one of those books about that area so you could have jump-started everything that you did by 2 years, you know. So anyway, that's just fun. That's one of the things that I'm doing, along with conferences and strategic locations. Do what?
As you talked Rabun County there, that's another hot spot. You got UFO and Bigfoot activity. You got a whole town or little community based off of kind of like a Stargate, little dome-shaped houses there. And then you've got, which I've experienced, I've had two, I've been up there a lot, up there doing research up in the mountains there, off of where I've had two incidents where we've had activity up there, Bigfoot activity or something.
Oh,
and
I have two. And by the way, I refuse to divulge where that's happened. Because
right.
I don't want, we don't need a bunch of tire
exactly.
kickers up there with guns
right.
going up there being stupid. I mean, if somebody wants to do some research, they can call me up and I'll check them out, make sure they're legit, and I'll talk to them. But I mean, yeah, I mean, I know what you mean. That, you know, there's some things that you and I find out through our research that we just can't be spilling those beans quite yet. Do you agree?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean,
so,
definitely.
I mean,
but that's the whole area, though, that is like we're talking about the UFO and Bigfoot connection. You've got all these high strange events in this one area. So is it because of the makeup of the minerals in the earth? Is it because it seems like there's a chain that goes all the way up the Appalachian Mountains? Is it parallel universes crossing over into one another and different things coming through different dimensions? That's a whole different topic. But as you go up, if you follow that mountain chain there, and it takes you up into the Smoky Mountains in North Carolina, and there's all kinds of Bigfoot, UFO sightings, it's all right there together. The whole parallel universe stuff, kind of cool story. I think it was in 1984. I'm not real sure. It was in the 80s, but I'm thinking it was 1984. I'm not positive. But there was... two people went missing on Roan Mountain right there as you're going up into Tennessee from Georgia. And the first one was a little boy, and him and his family were camping, and he went to go get some water from the stream. And you could see it was just not even, so many feet from their camp there, and he went to get it. Well, he disappeared, and he never come back until 4 or 5 days later he came back. And in the same area where they had searched the entire park, everything, and he told his mom, and this is what was wild, because it was during the time of year when it would get warm during the day, and then it'd get down about freezing at nighttime in the spring. So and he was just wearing his regular clothes. He hadn't suffered hypothermia, anything like that. He said that he had seen a cabin, and it had his grandpa in it. And he went, he ate breakfast with his grandpa, and he claims that he seen his mom. He was yelling and waving at her, and she could not see him. And but there was nothing wrong with the kid. He was fed, everything, like 4 or 5 days later, whenever they find him in the same spot, they lost him. And now, 2 weeks later,
Matt, just
another
quickly,
man.
Matt, before you proceed, was that Roan Mountain, R-O-A-N-E?
Yes, Roan Mountain. Yep, Roan,
okay,
yep, Roan Mountain, Tennessee. And 2 weeks later, there's these young boys are probably about 19, 20. They're hiking up there. It gets hot. One boy takes his shirt off because it's hot during the day and they're hiking. And then he steps off the trail. He has to use the bathroom, steps off the trail, and he don't come back. And then they find him 4 or 5 days later, and he's wearing a curtain from a house, like a window curtain wrapped around him, and they find him. And he said that he went into this old house, and he took the curtain because it got cold at night and wrapped himself up because all he had on was blue jeans and tennis shoes, didn't have a shirt. So he wrapped that around him to keep warm. Now, they searched the entire park, couldn't find him, and he returned 4 or 5 days later. Now, that entire park, they said there was no cabins, there are no old houses, nothing for them to say where they were at. There's no physical evidence in that area for them to say, hey, they was in this, I was on this, in this old cabin or this old house. There's no structures like that in that park, in that area, on that mountain there, I guess. They said there was nothing there like that. So, of course, you got Bigfoot activity going on there. You got UFO activity being seen there. Now you got people disappearing and reappearing, saying that they had seen, the little boy said he'd seen his mom. He's yelling and waving at her, and she didn't even hear him.
Yep. And you know, it's interesting. You're talking about basically the northeast corner of Georgia going up into Tennessee, correct?
Correct, yep.
And, you know, and then we all know the other gigantic hot spot in the nation, which is Mount Shasta in California. There are plenty of people who have vanished. I mean, just almost in the thin air, and people watching them vanish. And they're gone for good. It's amazing that we do have these hot spots, and National Science Foundation wants to count the number of butterflies in a farm. As I said, that's what they like to do. They'll have to come on the show. I invite anybody from the National Science Foundation Grants Department, I invite you to come on this show and explain to you why you want support research like this, support research about this. Sure, you know, there's a lot of fake, crummy research out there. But there's also some very serious, good research. And Matt, you and I,
exactly.
Think you and I try to be on the side of the good, solid research, or we just don't say anything, you know.
Another thing too, like okay, up there in that same area, okay, as you go up farther up into North Carolina side, you've heard of the wild men or the feral people. Of the Smokies, haven't you?
No, I haven't. You know, it's so funny. I mean, I had to bone up on the Moon-Eyed people for the television show, and I had 2 days to learn about the Moon-Eyed people. I did. So the feral people. Oh yeah, feral people of the Appalachians, right?
Yeah, they're well up there, especially the Smokies. These are like prehistoric men, basically like cavemen. Some people think they just went up there to separate themselves from society, which a lot of that happens. But these people are like aggressive, cannibalistic, they're up there. People have sightings, and it's mostly on the North Carolina side. Now, I was, in 2020, it was in 2020, it was in late November, I was with my parents. We went to Cataloochee Valley, that is up there on the North Carolina side of the Smoky Mountains, just across the Tennessee border. And that's where you get all these prehistoric men sightings and aggressive, eating carcasses and just, you know, they look like Neanderthal type. Now, I was up there with my mom and dad, and I'm in Cataloochee Valley. I get out of the vehicle, and I'm taking pictures. I look, and my phone, the time had changed, and my dad's phone had changed. He got out and started taking some pictures. Well, my mom, she stayed in the vehicle, and her phone didn't change time or anything. So all of a sudden, I start feeling nauseous. My dad's feeling sick. We both start vomiting. I look at my phone, and at the date and time, it changed to August 24th at like 11:34. And I can't remember if it was AM or PM.
I'm sorry. It changed to August 24th at 11:34 AM or PM.
Yes. I can't remember if it was AM or PM on the thing. I've got it screenshot, though.
But versus what had it been?
It was, I'd say it was week right around Thanksgiving. I can't remember. I think it was weekend right before Thanksgiving in late November. And I'm taking all these pictures, and I'm physically sick.
So you jumped back a couple of months.
Yes, exactly. Okay. My phone, it's showing August 24th. Now, my mom didn't get out of the vehicle. She stayed in the vehicle. Now, we get out of that area, and I start feeling better. My dad starts feeling better. I go back, and we're looking. We're like, well, where's all our pictures? I had taken pictures of elk. I'd seen, took a video of a bear with two little ones. All these pictures are not, whenever you take them, they put right in your gallery at the time and date that you took them, correct?
That is correct.
So I get looking. I'm like, I'm mad because I'm like, well, I got all these pictures. So I start scrolling back. Do you know where all those pictures and stuff went to? August 24th
where?
On my phone gallery. August 24th,
okay.
The time that it said my phone changed to in the gallery on my phone.
You know, I've got a funny story to tell you that happened today. All right, so I'm sending a text message to Elijah Henderson, our buddy, you know, from up there in land between the lakes. And I sent him three messages on iMessage, you know, the standard messenger app. And so I wanted to go back and look at them and just kind of see what I did. They were gone. I mean, I know how to hit, Matt, I know how to hit send, don't you?
Yep.
And I know exactly how to hit send, and so I had to resend them. But it was just so strange. I mean, this is like they vanished into somewhere in time. That's that old movie starring Christopher Reeve, Somewhere in Time. But they just vanished. I don't know where they went. My phone works just fine. It's a Motorola. It's a nice phone, a couple $100 phone, and it works great. But those messages were just gone. I don't know where they went. So, I mean, things happen
and
all the time,
exactly.
Don't they?
Yeah, and what was wild was, you know, me and my dad were both sick. My mom didn't get out of the vehicle, so she was fine. All her pictures went to the time on her phone. But where we had done it, they all disappeared back to the date that were our phone. So it's making me wonder now, did we get caught in some kind of a weird, you know, little thing in time there?
Yeah, I remember this story. You told me this story several years ago.
Yes.
And I remember this story.
And you can see it's clearly no trees on the no leaves on the trees, all the pictures I took, you could tell it was taken during the wintertime, but yet they're in August on my phone in the middle of one of the hottest parts of summer. So are these
do me a favor, if we dare mess around with anything, would you please send me one of those pictures from August 24th, which has the bear trees.
Yeah, I can do a whole screenshot.
And I will post that on Houston Bigfoot. I think that'll be a massive thing. Let me see what kind of trouble we can get into with that. How does that sound, Matt?
That sounds great. So it's making me wonder if these Neanderthal-type people, are we coming across these multi-universes where something is the timelines are crossing and something's getting stuck over here? Do you see where I'm going with this?
Yes and no. I see it. You're moving forward about it, but it's like we can't even begin to start explaining this. We have no idea. I mean,
exactly.
In a way, you're talking about the double slit experiment. You're talking about Schrodinger's cat. You don't know if it's dead or alive until you look at it. And that's the only, I mean, I can't even, but it just has the same feeling. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It just has the same feeling. That all of a sudden you're up there, it's November, fall, the leaves have changed, they're on the ground, you're taking pictures, but yet your phone registers a different date and the pictures go backwards.
Yep.
And
I get physically sick. Physically sick, that's the thing.
Right. And if you think about it, you don't know what's going on until you look at the pictures. And the pictures didn't have leaves on them. So, again, that's why it just has that, kind of that feeling. Whatever. It's just amazing. All right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to break in, but I just thought it was, I thought it was funny. In a very interesting scientific way. Fair enough, Matt.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, I mean, we can't say this or that, but we can come up with, our own thoughts and opinions on what may have happened or what might happen.
No, these are not our own just thoughts and opinions. These are based on a little bit of research and a little bit of scientific knowledge. Unlike our friends, the skeptics, Lord knows they just say what they want to say because they like to hear themselves talk, especially the amazing Randy, who's about as unamazing as they come. But and if anybody wants to get mad at me about that, you can just call me up and get mad, 843-655-8775. Call me up and yell at me about the amazing Randy if you're a fan. I think he's an idiot in many, many ways. And that million dollar challenge of his, I just think that's such a crock. So anyway, I'm sorry, Matt. I'm getting in your way here. Back to you, Matt.
Well, I'm just okay. So as we look at it, so after all this research and you start to experience this stuff for yourself, there's got to be a connection, especially in these areas. You're getting UFO. You're getting Bigfoot. Alien. So the whole connection. You have to look outside that box. You can't just stay inside that box. I probably sound nuts, but, we've experienced these things. You spend enough time out there and you're going to start experiencing these things, and not everybody's crazy,
Well, you can be like Nikola Tesla, and you can stay out of the box your entire life. And that's about what he did. He just stayed outside of the box. He let Thomas A. Edison steal his ideas and stay inside the box with Consolidated Edison, whatever. But I know, I'm sorry, I'm being a very bad guy, and I'm going to get written up by the men in black here, I can tell you that.
It's like Stan Gordon, some of his research and all the UFO and the Bigfoot connection. They got reports of Bigfoot holding orbs, going into ships, leaving in ships. I think you got multiple different beings, but everybody always wants classified as Bigfoot, but it could be an alien race. You could have a prehistoric man. You've got so much going on out there that you have to look at the whole big picture.
Yeah, and then our friend Jen Cruz talks about the green orbs, and the green orbs are Bigfoot. And, probably. I don't doubt it. That's what she thinks, and that's what she feels. And sometimes what you think and what you feel might be the case. But anyway, it's all good.
The orbs and Bigfoot, that's another thing, too. I believe it's all different. You've got different beings. It just depends on what you classify as Bigfoot. Just because it has hair on it doesn't mean it's, I guess it could be Bigfoot, but
I'm gonna do a joke here. And in 1962, if it had hair on it, it was the Beatles. Thank you for there laughing, you Matt. That was my attempt. That was my dad joke for tonight. Kyler, you didn't laugh. Kyler, you didn't laugh. I'm not happy with you, buddy. That was the worst possible joke I could have come up with. So, all right, back to the topic at hand. Okay.
But yeah, you've got so many different scenarios. Everybody always, you know, they just break it down, but it's more than just Bigfoot. These things are, you got different types of species of these things. So it just depends on what you want to consider is Bigfoot. The Indians, you know, you've got the spirit of the woods, the watchers, you know, they, the mind speak, the telepath, they're good. You know, they come to you. And then you've got another version of what people consider Bigfoot, like the Skookum that would come and eat people, and the giants, and, you know, they would steal the Native Americans' children and their, you know, the women or men, anybody they get a hold of, and they'd eat them. And you've heard of, like, Lovelock Cave, where they had this big war with these things, and there were skeletons. Native Americans had burned them inside this cave, and they have skulls, everything like that, but all of a sudden they disappeared. They got pictures of them. All of a sudden they disappeared, these giant skulls. So, you know, are these ancient people crossing through a timeline? Is it an alien form that's coming through with a UFO? Are the aliens coming through another dimension and doing experiments on these creatures and dropping out? You know how they abduct people?
No, but likely it was the Smithsonian Institute picking up the bones and running off with them. You know that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yep.
It's so much bigger than it's outside the box. If you look inside this one box and just limit your research, then you're going nowhere. And people have got to realize that. If they want answers, they're going to have to look outside the box. They have to. I mean, you got UFO activity. I guarantee it. There's going to be some Bigfoot sightings too.
Well, I want to tell you something. You talk about things happening. It didn't occur to me until very recently what had been going on. We had you remember you were at the very first Lizard Man Festival in Bishopville, weren't you?
Yes.
And you, like Lyle Blackburn, took people out, and it was great. And there was a guy from Frontier Cable. No, not Frontier. It was Frontier Cable. And he filmed a documentary on me. Do you remember that or not? Because a lot of people saw that on YouTube, okay?
No, I don't remember that.
Yeah, well,
I know
a lot of people
Smithsonian Institute was there.
Wait.
Okay.
Just wait. I'm getting to that. So, and I'm not going to mention the guy's name, but I know who he is. Well, it's interesting. About a year after that thing disappeared, I called up Frontier Cable in Williamsburg, South Carolina. They never heard of this guy working there. He gave me a business card. He worked there. He filmed this documentary on him. That documentary is gone. And there was a so-called professor from a college in Texas. He was there, wrote an article. That article showed up in Smithsonian Magazine. So if you want to say Smithsonian was there, they were absolutely right there reporting on the Lizard Man Festival.
Yep,
and I got called.
They wrote about me in that article.
Uh-huh. They wrote about you. They wrote about me. They wrote about all of us. And I'm going to tell you something. It was really funny. I mean, that's so silly to call me a genius. I'm not a genius. I like the paranormal, and I like to run events. So don't call me a genius because I ran the Lizard Man Festival. That's dumb. But anyway, that was kind. But, you know, it was just very interesting. So Smithsonian Magazine's reporting on that for all the world to see and let everybody know who was there. So what I did was I got permission from that professor. And that is included in the book that it keeps coming out one day, The Lizard Man Companion. The article is in the book. I wouldn't dare have that book without that article. And I asked him, he said, sure. But that's kind of a record of what all happened and who was there. Because I remember, now that you say that, you were mentioned in that article. You were.
Oh, yes. Yep. And another thing about Escape or Swamp there, whenever we were there then, we went out into the swamp, stuff like that. When we went back the second time, it's all posted, no trespassing. It's got signs all over it now.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. That's right. They're doing their – oh, and by the way, that artesian well, you know, where the work crew drank from and they saw the lizard man, that thing is being covered. It's like it's being covered up. It's like they put leaves over it. They put dirt over it. Somebody wants to get rid of all evidence of the lizard man. Interesting.
Yep.
But anyway, and you know, Matt, I hate to say it, but it's about our closing time. But let me ask you this. Can we stop this conversation right here and pick this up in a couple of weeks? We'd love to have you back just to continue the Bigfoot UFO connection. Is that all right with you?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Most definitely.
Tyler, is that okay with you? Is Kyler there?
Did we lose him? Did we put him to sleep?
When you made any conferences or anything like that that you can tell us about?
I'm sorry, I lost you there.
I'm saying, you got anything you're going to, any events or whatever?
I don't know quite yet. I'm going to be...
Can you hear me yet?
There we go.
Yeah, we can hear you
there. There we go. Okay, yeah, I got dropped in the middle of our show and you guys couldn't hear me.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
All right, but anyway, Matt, so you will let us know next time what events you're going to be at and what's going on with you, right?
I'm going to be trying to go to New Orleans and the swamps here within the next month, maybe. So I'll be able to hopefully report on that. I'm sorry, what was that?
Yeah.
I think we're losing him now.
Yep. So
that would be good. So, well, that'll be great, and thanks. And I guess all I've got to report is we've announced the Havelock Comic Con in Havelock, North Carolina, the home of Cherry Point Marine Base and Naval Base, and it's going to be a blast. Remember the 19th, more in the Comic Con series as we get back after COVID. And Kyler, since you were muffled or whatever, or maybe the men in black wouldn't let you talk, what have you got to say? And then we're going to
I can't wait for our show next week, because this whole conversation that we've been having about, you know, jumping back and forth from Bigfoot and UFO and time traps and portals is blown my mind every time we talk about it. So thank you for jumping on, Matt. I can't wait to hear from you next week.
So Matt, I think Kyler just asked you back next week. Is that okay?
That'd be great.
Absolutely.
Okay. Tyler, thank you very much. I've told him to come back sometime. I'm glad you asked him for next week. That's fine. So we'll see everybody next week. Matt Dell will be our guest. Tyler Smith will be here, as unless he's muffled by the men in black. I will be here, except what nobody knows is my call dropped 6 times tonight, and I covered it up. Okay, join us next week. It's a lot of fun. We'll have Matt Delph again. Tyler, thank you. And I'll say, we'll see you folks later on the one, the only Houston Bigfoot. Good night, boys.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Bye.